Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The first Frontline documentary of 2021 airs at a special time. It's tonight at 8 p.m. Central on SDPB-TV. A Thousand Cuts focuses on journalist Maria Ressa, who has faced criminal charges, death threats, and online harassment stemming from her coverage of Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte. Since becoming president in 2016, Duterte has waged a bloody war on drugs while strengthening his grip on government and striving to keep the press under his thumb. Ramona Diaz is a filmmaker and director. She screened A Thousand Cuts with great success on the film festival circuit, and she joins us to preview her film before its Frontline premiere tonight on PBS. Ramona, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about Maria Ressa for listeners who don't know who she is, and a little bit about Rappler and how her role changed so much when this new president took power in 2016.
Sure. So Maria Ressa has been a journalist for 35 years now. She's actually a renowned journalist from the Philippines. She headed both the Jakarta Bureau and the Manila Bureau, CNN, for close to 20 years in the 80s and in the early 90s, before she formed basically what was a startup, Rappler. It's an online news site in the Philippines, the only online news site in the Philippines that's fully online. And this happened in 2011, and President Duterte became president. He rose to power in 2016. And Rappler and Maria started questioning his drug war. He ran on a drug war. He said he was going to go after drug dealers and drug users. And he did just that right after he became president. And the bodies started piling up on the streets. And Maria and Rappler started questioning that, questioning impunity and questioning the numbers of bodies that were piling up on the streets. And that's when she attracted the ire of President Duterte, who did not want to be questioned about this war. And that's how this all began. So he threatened to shut down Rappler, and Rappler is still in danger of being shut down. They're fighting it. And right now, Maria is fighting court cases against her that have been filed by the government. She has been found guilty of cyber libel, which is exactly what it is. It's like libel on the internet, and can go to jail for up to 6 years. She's out on bail. She's appealing that to the Supreme Court, to the Court of Appeals. And then she has 8 other cases that she's fighting. She's supposed to bail 9 times, been arrested twice, been detained once, and on it goes. And if she's found guilty on all those cases, she can go to prison for close to 100 years, the rest of her life, for a cumulative sentence from all those cases. So that's where we are. That's where we are right now. And she's still fighting. She's still speaking out. And we'll see. It's still an ongoing story.
And I want to be clear, when you say, you know, the bodies start piling up, this is a president who speaks in a language that is threatening to the point where he says in 2016, if you're into drugs, pretty soon you'll make a mistake and I will kill you. And then the first body is found 3 hours later. This is a very cause and effect. I'm going to kill you. You will be assassinated. You will die. What has Rappler been seeing about the war on drugs that is really a war on poor people?
Yes, it's a war. It's a war on the poor. The numbers, you know, the government says the numbers of dead are closer to 4,000, which in itself is horrific. That's a horrific number because there's no due process, right? And the reasoning for the dead is that they fight back. You know, when they're arrested, they fight back, so they're shut down, they're shot. But the human rights groups have said, well, the number is closer to 27,000, which is like close to genocide numbers. So that's the first thing they questioned. And then they started questioning social media and how President Duterte has used, basically social media to weaponize he's weaponized social media, basically. And he's used trolls to really spread propaganda about his drug war and about other policies, controversial policies he's had since 2016. So, yeah, it's and also drug, you know, drug addicts and drug pushers are, it's an easy monster to create, because who wants drug addicts and drug dealers on your street? You do not, but you, neither can you kill them, right, without due process. But he really, I think he sparked the imagination of people because he spoke this populist language and created enemies, joint enemies, right? We have, like, and those enemies were drug dealers, drug pushers, the elite, media, and he said, you know, I will avenge the ills that befall you. And he was really talking to very marginalized, the poor people. Right. I will avenge the ills that befall you. Not only will I change your life, I will avenge it. So it's a language that people really sort of spark their imagination. And like elsewhere, he spoke like someone you could hang out with and have a beer. And he didn't speak like a politician. So that also was very attractive back in 2016.
Yeah. He's the Dirty Harry of Mindanao. He is. But when you talk about creating a monster, the monster he also wants to create is the press. And he says Rappler is fake news. He tells reporters, do you think you're above being assassinated? His language towards the press is very specific and stark, but then it is also followed up by these actions, and I want to get back to something that you just said and expand on it, which is using bots to attack and using social media, from social media celebrities to trolls and bots, and to go after people like Maria Ressa. Tell us more about when Maria started noticing that the algorithms on Facebook, and what, 100% of Filipinos are on Facebook, so this is the internet. When the algorithms, when she started reporting on how they worked, and then started realizing that the bots were coming after her personally.
Well, yeah, she started realizing this back in 2016, because, like she always says, she was the victim, right? When they started questioning impunity, when she started questioning Duterte's policies and writing about them, she was hit by, like, what is it, 98 messages per hour. And what she did was, she, like you do, I think back then you respond to them, right? Then she realized, oh my God, it's not a response they want from me. They want to just pound me to silence. That's what they want to do. So that's why she pivoted and said, and started looking at the networks, actually, that created this, the bots that created the hate messages. And because she said, if you go after content, it's a whack-a-mole game, right? You get one here and someone else will appear here. It's useless. So you have to look at the systems and the networks that create this, and then pinpoint that one account and go after that one account, because otherwise it's a losing battle. And then she started also talking about the engineering of the social platforms, where hate speech is just incentivized more than anything else. So hate and division spread faster on social media than anything else. And they started realizing that by these diagrams. They started just following where all these fake accounts and messages were coming from. And so so she spoke about algorithms and Facebook and democracy back in 2016. It was incredible that no one then was talking about that, right? She actually did go to Mark Zuckerberg to show him, right? This is what's happening in the country. Be careful. It might happen here. And, you know, here we are, 2021, right?
Right. And so there's lots that we probably should unpack right now as we are here in January 8th in 2021. She speaks in the documentary about why Americans should care about what's happening in the Philippines. And maybe after the events in Washington, D.C. this week, it doesn't even need to be said. But let's make the connection, because she has been saying for some time Philippines is an English-speaking country, and they have been an experiment for data mining companies and people who have a malintent on how to use data to spread disinformation and false narratives. They learn how to do this in a place like the Philippines with a weaker government structure, but is English-speaking. Tell me why Americans should care about Maria Ressa as it relates to their lives today, especially this week, as we saw social media used to encourage people and the words of a president used to encourage people to take action in the real world.
Yeah, because as you see in the film, it really, the Philippines is a cautionary tale, right? Because, like you said, social media platforms really test out things in the global south. And if it works there, it's brought over to the West. Just like other products, right? Just like pharmaceuticals and other services, social media platforms do this as well. And they do it in countries like the Philippines because we are English-speaking, because 100% of people who are on the internet are on Facebook, which is an incredible number, but it's true. So Facebook is our internet. So Facebook has a big, big part in trying to figure out how information, right, spreads, how that their engineering works, actually. We're talking about the engineering of the social media platforms. And right. So I think people in this country should care because it is what's happening right now. We are not, we live in silos. Basically, that's what happens. You start living in silos, so there's this whole middle where no one is sharing. We don't share facts anymore. We don't agree on shared facts, right? Like, I'm not even talking about truth, because truth is kind of fungible, like my truth, your truth, you know? It's so relative, but facts. Like, it's right now here in Baltimore, where I live, it is sunny outside. That's a fact. Trump lost the election. That is a fact, you know. So, but we don't, once we don't have shared facts, then it's very hard to have democracy, basically. You don't have discussions, and you live in silos. And if you're on the right, you're pushed further to the right. If you're on the left, you're pushed further to the left. So how can anyone have a decent discussion, and how can then facts emerge? You know, it also makes you question what you've always believed, right? It's gaslighting.
Right.
Because once something is said many, many, many times, you see it over all over social, you start questioning, wait a minute, is that true? Is that not true? And there you go, right? It's death when that happens. Death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah. 26 fake accounts can affect millions of accounts. So it doesn't take a lot of trolls to create a huge disruption. I want to ask a question about you as a filmmaker beyond just Maria and the great work that she is doing as a journalist. As you're putting together this story, as you're getting to know Maria, as you're following her, as you're following the president and this internet influencers, Mocha and other people who are part of this story, how did you kind of do the work that you're doing to tell her story? Were you blocked or threatened, or tell me a little bit about your journey, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you watch a film, you'll see that I also had access to people in the president's inner circle, like Mocha Usan and General Bato de la Rosa, who was actually the implementer of the drug war in 2016. So the president knew I was making the film. We also needed permission from his people to film him up close during the rallies, because otherwise we would have been back there in the media box, which was too far. So I think the fact that he knew we were making the film, this is also not my first film, so people know of my other work in the Philippines. The fact, I think, that we were very transparent was a shield for us. I think if we had done it under the radar, it would have been more dangerous. So, and obviously we were surveilled, and that was a given. Even to a point where it became kind of funny, because then I'd start talking to someone like a chief of staff of the General Batol was running for Senate, and he would say, "So, how was you were up north yesterday? How was that?" And it's really weird. And they're like, "Oh my God!" Of course, I knew how he knew, but the fact that he was so open about it, it became such a joke, and but still scary. But we just took it for granted. Yes, we're surveilled. Yes, it's probably also, when you start following someone like Maria who has to don a bulletproof vest, then you have to also think twice. Well, what are we doing here? But how can you not, right? I'm a documentary filmmaker. How can I not tell this story? So it was an interesting journey for sure.
That's one of the questions I have, that, you know, as the film progresses, you start, clearly caring about Maria Ressa and worrying for her safety. And, you know, she's one of Time's, top 100. She, travels to the U.S. and she makes the decision again and again to return to the Philippines. She's, points out, "I am not a flight risk. I will come back, even though I know I am being arrested," but they arrest her anyway. But she's not the only journalist that you're covering who, there are other Rappler journalists who are under fire, and you're doing the same thing. You're going back and risking. So I want to talk about that risk, because as viewers become to care more and more about not just the story, but the people in the story, we become increasingly worried for their safety and for their freedom. You're filming that and telling that story as you are also experiencing it yourself. Tell me more about what that's like for you and your crew.
Gosh, that's such an interesting question, Laurie, because you really have to think about it, right? And my worry was my local crew, because I live here. I brought in cinematographers as well, and some sound recordists. And we understood that after the filming, we would leave and they would stay. So my first concern was really my local crew. And so we had the discussion when it was so apparent that the government was after Maria and her journalists. I said, "This is what's happening. You all know it, and you can leave without, and I won't take it against you. No black man. I'll understand if you walk away right now. Because you all live here." And I also, to my foreign crew, I told them, "This is what's happening." Because I needed transparency. I needed them to be fully on board and know. I mean, all our decisions, our threshold for risk is so individual and personal. But none of them, not one, left the project, because they all felt it was the right story to tell, which was, it was pretty amazing, that conversation. I still remember it today, because all of them decided to stay. And so we decided, as the production decided, for as long as we can keep them safe working, working with us, we were going to house everyone together, right? So they didn't have to go home at night alone, far away, 2 hours away, whatever. Everyone was housed in the same complex. So that's what we did to keep their safety, to be safe, for as long as we had control of that. But it's certainly, it's a decision. It's certainly a reckoning. You have to really ask yourself, can I do this? And Maria certainly was an inspiration, because she was doing it. And I'm like, oh my God, if she is, then why can't I, do it as well? So you decide. You come and you just embrace it and you go forward. And I always say that my imagined regrets not doing the film would always outweigh the present fear. So that's how we got around it, and that's how I personally got around it.
Yeah, the international community is important in this story, and that spotlight, that consistent, relentless spotlight, is incredibly important. She says that in the film, that if we stop talking about it, that's when the risk it becomes greater. In our remaining 30 seconds, is there anything else that you just want people, here in South Dakota to understand about this story as they get ready to tune in, and how important it is to keep talking about free press issues here at home as well as across the world?
Yeah, there's something I've learned making this film. I'm not very prescriptive when it comes to messages in my films, but for me personally, what I learned about making this film is that democracy is hard work, right? Systems are fragile.